Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchlist.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined for the final episode of our run through his top 400. It's Nick Pollock, and we are not getting to all 400 today, Nick, but listen, the sun, it is a shining. We've beaten back the winter. The World Baseball Classic is really exciting right now, and the sun's out. I wish I could watch more games on MLB TV right now for spring, but I'm feeling like it's baseball season.
Yeah, it really does feel like that finally. It's nice. It was like 60 degrees or something in New York.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it just all of a sudden turned around like that. And I'm stoked about this. What is it, 68?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I need to get outside, but I'm not because I'm catching up on all this work. And I was talking to Eric about this. I made my own personal thing that is just like my favorite app ever for researching guys. And I do want to publicly apologize to everyone that I haven't done my morning article and podcast as frequently as I've wanted. I've just had so much, much more than I could ever expect right now going on. And it's just, it's tough to do it. And I'm trying as best as I can to catch up this week. So I got out the article today. I'm going to record that podcast after this with Eric. But I am starting to really feel like I'm doing my homework now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing like our rankings and top 400. We're trying to really understand it all. We're trying to get our flashcards ready. But now I'm starting to really understand the intricacies of each of these rotations, who actually is going to get those starts, who isn't, who are the ones that we actually really want to go for, who are the ones that we might want to hold for that opening weekend and who we don't. It's really, really important. And Cash, you couldn't agree more as she's I can't wait for her top 100 to come out. You know, as she she's poking her tail at everyone saying, guys,
it's going to be these rankings are terrible. Yarn.
Yeah. Listen, we got to watch it on YouTube. You don't know what I'm talking about, y'all.
Yeah. And also, like, listen, we've gotten some drafts under our belt now. You and I are in the same TGFBI, which we'll probably talk a little bit about on our next episode, just going through like what our actual strategy looks like in an actual draft. Like, how did we do with our strategy and whatever? I did an OC last night, which is an NFBC 12 team redraft. And listen, like, the strategy changes when you're in there, depending on your draft slot too. But, you know, I have found, like, you know, the guys that we're going to get to today, right, which is like, hey, these are the fun, should be in a 12-team league, the fun upside flyers you draft at the end of your draft, because this is outside of the top 76 pitchers on Nick's list. So hopefully you're not, like, looking for your SP4 or SP5 within a pitcher ranked, you know, outside of the top 80. But these are the fun upside guys. And I found myself looking at a lot of these guys at the end of drafts and in the moment in a draft thinking, I might just take a hitter and then just see what the first week of the regular season looks like. Because there are question marks on a lot of these guys. There's maybe not the upside that we're used to seeing. Who knows? Some of these guys are maybe like safe and boring and better for 15 team leagues. And we're going to get into all that today. So I'm going to go through the tier. And we're not going to go deep dive on every single pitcher within the tier. I'm going to give you the tier and all of the names. And then Nick and I are going to pick the places we want to like jump in based on pitchers that we really like. And hopefully that will allow us to talk about, you know, some pitchers deeper in Nick's rankings right now. We're going to do it. We're also going to do just a new quick theme because it's hot and sunny outside, Nick. We're just going to do just, you know, does it remind you of the first day of spring? Just anything about the first day of spring. Is it a walk outside? Is it switching from hot coffee to iced coffee? I don't like drinking iced coffee when it's 20 degrees outside. Can't do it. Whatever it might be for you. So that's what we're going to switch to for today. We're starting with starting pitcher number 77. We should remind you this is the middle of the hipster number one tier. That started with number 73, Andrew Painter, number 74, Spencer Strider, number 75, Logan Henderson, 76, Robbie Snelling, 77, Braxton Ashcraft, 78, Tanner Bibee, and 79, Jack Flaherty. We're starting at 77, Braxton Ashcraft, and that's a good place to start because he is one of these late round helium guys. Braxton Ashcraft is getting a lot of love. He seems locked into the Pittsburgh Pirates rotation right now. And I'm curious if you, you know, believe that there is some legitimacy to what you're seeing out of Ashcraft.
Eno certainly got me more on the Ashcraft train. I wasn't really enthused after last year. Like what we saw of him, I remember really the only game that was any good was when we were waiting for Bubba Chandler's debut and he went five innings against the Rockies as we had to wait and wait and wait. And that was Rocky Road, right? Ashcraft has a really good slider. It is 92. It is good movement. Like that's the pitch. He has velocity. It's not the most exciting velocity. I don't think he has the greatest command either. There is also a curve that is a good, hard two-plane curve. I don't think he's as consistent as I want him to be on that. Mm-hmm. And overall, it just doesn't quite come together in the way of other exciting arms. And I'll tell you this right now. If Justin Wabolski is inside the Dodgers rotation, and I think I'd rather have him than Braxton Ashcraft.
And I think he is. We'll talk about that. I had Braxton Ashcraft written up in an article I did over on NBC Sports about like late round starting pitchers that have top 25 upside. And I go through like these criteria for me, which is like, I think at least a chance to hit 130 innings. Cause you kind of, that's like, seems like a decent benchmark for top 25 upside. Strikeout upside, fastball success, deep pitch mix. Couple things stood out to me. First is Ashcraft has never thrown more than 118 innings in a professional season. That's not to say he can't hit 130, 140, 50. It's just something.
It doesn't matter as much in your 12 teamer too, because it's a guy you expect to drop anyway. So if he's pitching all through April and you gain value, that's great.
Yeah. He had a 24% strikeout rate last year, 13.2% swinging strike rate. As you mentioned, a lot of that is that the slider is a really good swinging strike pitch to right-handed hitters. Like that is a very legitimate pitch. He also uses the slider to lefties. It was his most used two strike pitch to lefties. And it did have a 21% put away rate last year to lefties, which is above average. He has a curve, which also had a 24% put away rate to lefties last year, but he doesn't use it as much, but like the breaking balls are fine. The slider and the slider is really good. And the curveball is solid. The four seam fastball is below average. And that's kind of why people like talked about Braxton Ashcraft and Mike Burrows in a similar way when they were both on the Pirates last year. It's like, hey, we've got some breaking balls that are interesting. We've got velocity, right? You're going to look at Braxton Ashcraft's velocity and you're going to say he's 97. How is it a bad fastball? Well, it has below average extension. It has just average vertical movement. It's pretty flat, but he keeps it low in the zone instead of high in the zone. And
empty velocity, guys.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
So there are just some things about it. It's like, you know, I do like that, you know, he has a sinker. So he's not just four seam reliant. He's got, you know, five pitches. Like there are some things here where I think Ashcraft will be solid for you. I just see him more as a guy where like in a 12 team league, you run through like a really strong stretch of a few weeks where he's really solid for you. And maybe he's on your roster for 5, 6, 7 starts, but then there might not be strikeout upside. And maybe you don't want to hold him when he gets 3 starts in a row against the Mets, the Dodgers and the Phillies or whatever. Like, I think that's the boat you're in with Ashcraft.
Yeah. And so something I really do emphasize a lot is you want to be starting pitchers the opening weekend, or at least they're for the first start of the year, especially if they're like an SP5 and if they're the one of the last guys you would drop. And actually right now, believe it or not, during this podcast, I'm updating my daily SP roundup chart that has like all of the starting pitchers expected for every team. And I update it throughout the spring to fill in like the SP5s and who's going to go where. That's in my daily article. And I know I haven't been updating it, but I did today, just put it out. And I'm actually adding in to that article the first two opponents that each team will face. So you can get a good sense of who they're going to face. And the Pirates, the opening weekend, are going to be in Citi Field. And then they're going into Cincinnati. Yeah. So when it comes to that rotation, well, it's going to be Skeens and then Keller. But it might be Ashcraft as the third, because Bubba Chandler would be the fourth. And then I think actually Jose Urquidy's the fifth, which is a really fun little mini sleeper there for like the NL onlys. Or it could be Hunter Barco. Other one. Right. Yeah. Don't worry. I got you. He's actually a question mark in that table.
Yeah.
Also Maldzinski as well. Maldzinski is actually just threw over 50 pitches, actually near 60, I want to say. So those are the three. But Jose Urquidy's like kind of found money for the Pirates. So I think that's what's going to happen there. But my point is, you don't want to start Braxton Ashcraft against the Mets, right?
Or in Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, I would feel a little bit better about in Cincinnati, honestly. But I would, there is an argument to be made that it is opening weekend. So at least you get something, and maybe he impresses against the Mets. Then you might go to Baltimore. I apologize. You'd be going into Wrigley next. Not what you want either. So I don't want to go for that kind of guy in my 12 teamer because Braxton Ashcraft not getting the matchups you want for a guy like that early on.
Yeah, I mean, there's ways to overthink it and be like, well, if he starts Sunday, then maybe the Mets aren't playing all their starters and whatever. But I take your point. Bibee and Flaherty, I think we kind of know who they are at this point. I would say you're probably a little lower on them than consensus. But I don't know if there's anything you want to mention about them.
Yeah, Bibee's just drove me bonkers like for 2 years. I was like, no, I don't buy this. I don't buy this. But they finally did it. I was like, fine, I'll give in whatever the results and everything's just working the slider and or cutter and change up fine. And the Gardens will go loose, whatever, safe play. And then he was just so bad. And he was like my biggest bust last year. I'm like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
So no, I won't buy into this. I won't buy into the recovery of September. I mean, it was really bad before that complete game shutout against the Tigers. I don't think he's all of a sudden fixed his slider.
Yeah. Fair. I hear you on that. Like I have a little more faith in Bibee, but you know, I'd be putting him in the 60s, not the 70s. Like you're picking nits at this point. Let's move to Toby's with upside number 3. And this starts with number 80, Kodai Senga, number 81, Joey Cantillo, number 82, Bailey Ober, number 83, Cody Ponce, number 84, Brian Baio, number 85, Seth Lugo, number 86, Landon Rupp, number 87, Tyler Mahle, number 88, Max Scherzer, 89, Quinn Priester, 90, Ryan Weiss, 91, Shane Smith. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
It's that screeching sound that you make opening a window that hasn't been opened in months.
Is that a good sound?
It's a wonderful sound. It's a wonderful sound. So sorry, everyone. I apologize for that.
Yeah. We should note very quickly on Quinn Priester that this was obviously written before or published before the note that Quinn Priester might not make his opening day start, might not start the rotation or start the season healthy. There was some concerning, I blurbed this for us last week. Actually, no.
Us being NBC Roto World.
Yes, Roto World, sorry. And there were some concerning comments from Brewers manager Pat Murphy where they know the issue is in the wrist, but they're trying to find out why the issue is in the wrist. So Priester has had an elbow MRI. He's had a shoulder MRI. And all of that stuff is coming up with no structural damage, which is nice. But it also means the Brewers are struggling to find out why his wrist is still in pain after having an offseason to deal with it. And that is obviously less fine. So I'm not optimistic right now that Priester will just come right back into the rotation. And this is reminding me a little bit of like what happened last spring with Sean Manaea, where we said, oh, well, it's an oblique or whatever. And he actually may be back at the end of spring. And maybe he only misses 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden that kept getting pushed back. And then Manaea wasn't back until June. And then his arm slot was also a mess because he was trying to figure out how to get back to that after the injury. And then it was just like not a really great season. And I just think with Priester, it was a really great story last year. It's not like he has overpowering stuff. So any changes to pitch movement, location, things like that are going to be amplified with him. And that's just not in a 12-team league. That's just not a risk I'm taking right now at all while we have this vague health situation.
I mean, you're absolutely right. This is the message that we're giving, right? That if you have an injury ding entering the season, like there's no reason to go for it. And not to mention, Quinn Priester wasn't this top 40 guy beforehand either. So you combine those two and it's just an absolute stay away for me.
So I'm curious where you go in this tier. I have a few names in this tier that I actually find really interesting. And we don't have to go in order, but I'm curious if there's anybody here that you find yourself kind of more inclined to take a gamble on.
Well, I would say that recently I am more intrigued, obviously, with like Cody Ponce, as I've talked about. I've talked about Ryan Weiss. Tyler Malley has been circled to me as a sleeper for an entire time he's been a San Francisco Giant. The moment he signed, I've been like, Tyler Malley is a perfect fit for this. As a guy who's been prone to home runs, and I can certainly have them limited against the lefties in that massive park in Oracle Park, and also a really good defense, even with the Rice. I say that every time, but seriously, I think it's still good for him. And he didn't pitch poorly last year. Like, he had a very successful season, obviously with some fortune, but it's not like we are off a 4 or 5 year race season for Malley. His fastball's at 92, 93 right now, which is good. We're cool with that. It's not the 94, 95 of old, but it still has good vert. He gets it upstairs. The slider and the splitter complement it well. I mean, it just seems like a guy that I'm going to have to make sure I get before you in TGFBI, Eric.
Yeah, in a 15 team league, I could see that. You already got his teammate Robbie Ray right before me, and that was
I did. I knew you'd take him. I mean, he was like the biggest gap of value. So
yeah, I agree with that. I'm curious where you alluded to Ryan Weiss real quick. Do you think Ryan Weiss is in the rotation? Because it would need to be a 6-man rotation for him to make it.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they? You know, with them, I mean, generally when we see a pitcher like a Mai come in, it would be a 6-man, and that's what teams have done in the past. Whenever you introduce a big name Asian pitcher who is not used to this kind of workload.
And if you also have Christian Javier and Lance McCullers in your rotation.
Well, that's what I was, right. And then you also have Hunter Brown, who's been the workhorse, and maybe that's why you wouldn't, because you really want to make sure that Hunter Brown goes more often. As I've said many a time, it's very possible to still have him on a 5-day schedule, while everyone else on a 6. You have Arrighetti also in that mix too. Ryan Weiss is, it just makes all the sense that Ryan Weiss would be in this rotation, because this is why they got him.
Yep.
He has the volume. He has like, it's a pretty cheap deal where
with minor league options, we should just know.
With minor league options. Yes. But this again is found money for the Astros. They're trying to find that volume and not overwork these guys who have this injury history. So I would be absolutely floored if the Astros looked at the rotation and said, you know what? Yeah, we're going to disrupt who we think is going to be this innings eater throughout the entire year, soak up these innings for us and try and get the most out of the injured guys, as opposed to trying to manage the innings across the others.
Yeah. For me, the two names that stand out are actually the two names at the top. I mean, there are other names.
Senga, but like, yeah. Senga's a first thought I had. Yeah.
I think Senga, I understand that he overperformed his underlying metrics last year when you look at like what his surface level stats were, and everybody would say, well, his ERA, he didn't actually pitch that well. And I get it. The injury he suffered is not an arm injury. I think that's important to denote. And then a lot of the rust and struggles at the end of the season were just coming back from an extended absence. And also the Mets were under heavy pressure because they had a lead collapsing the playoffs. Rushed and they had called up these young arms. And so they were like, listen, we're going to roll with these young guys and see if we can get into the postseason. I know that Senga's whole thing is command. And so it's like when you see these reports about spring training, you're like, oh, he's 97. It's like, yeah, that's great. But like, is he throwing strikes? And for me, the cutter has always been a big pitch for him because, as you mentioned, it was a big addition to the second half of his first season. And when he was able to establish the strike zone, he got so much better because we know he has the swing and miss with that ghost fork. I just think when you're getting as late as you're getting Kodai Senga right now, it's very rare that you're going to get a guy who legitimately has like fantasy SP2, SP3 upside if he pitches the way he did pre-injury. And you're getting him at a point where like, if he doesn't pitch that way, you move on and you're not, you know, you're not worse for the wear in that sense. Like, you're not going to be holding the bag. And again, good team. So good win totals. And then I really like Joey Cantillo. I understand that he's got the Vulcan change, and it's really hard to command that Vulcan change. Vulcan? Yeah.
Oh man, no wonder it's so filthy. I mean, he's actually really good at getting strikes on it. So,
but listen, I mean, I chatted with him in late August when he was playing the Mets, and he was very open about how pitching out of the bullpen helped him as a starter. in terms of not only optimizing his pitch mix, but also like with his changeup being like, I'm going to throw this over the middle of the plate because it drops down and I'm not going to like worry about like hitting the knee, whatever it was. But I just think Joey Cantillo has a lot of upside on a team that's going to let him pitch. Like, I think he's in that rotation pretty firmly. They did their bullpen experiment with him last year and he pitched his way out of it into the rotation. I think he's in the rotation for a while. And I just think Cantillo has a lot of upside. I'm really trying to get him in drafts wherever I can.
Yeah, Cantillo is someone that I'm okay with. Like, I feel like he's going to go back and forth. He's going to be a bit of a hipster where you're going to have those like 8 strikeout games. The changeup just had 9 over 19 whiffs, 8 over 13 to right-handers alone, mm-hmm. which is just so good. And it's really about, okay, please don't hit my four-seamer because that is a very hittable four-seamer and his command of that pitch has not been good. The bad news I have is that his first start's going to be in Los Angeles if he's a part of that rotation. They're going to Seattle first. I would be shocked if he's in that those first three games in that rotation. Mm-hmm. There's really no way. But then again, we see weird rotations the start of the year. Sometimes guys go, you know what? We're just going to throw this guy at this point because this person needs an extra whatever. So we'll see. If Cantillo is actually locked as the 1-2-3 or the third there, really, great. I highly doubt it. Logan Allen has not impressed. He's pitching for Canada right now. He had a horrific game in his first one to the point that it felt like a kid who is hoping that his parents aren't watching when he does something because, are the Guardians watching this game? I hope not. Please don't let this ruin my chances in the rotation because Parker Messick is there. And I think all of us agree that Parker Messick is a better pitcher than Logan Allen. However, Allen has gotten more of the opportunities in spring than Messick has as a starter. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Logan Allen just pitched one inning of relief, though. And if even that, I think it was maybe like 0.2 innings for Canada in the last game. And I mean, obviously, it's a different situation, WBC and all. But that's not the best thing for his case. Long story short, though, Cantillo does seem like, yeah, he's in that rotation. He's pitching the same day as Logan Allen, too, which is kind of interesting because maybe then it becomes Parker Messick. I don't know what's going on. I'm okay with Cantillo. I just feel you're not going to want to start him against the Dodgers. It might go okay, but there's going to be this oscillation of him performing and not. And I'm trying as much as I can to avoid those, even though I'm going to get some FOMO with it. With Senga, 95 to 96 in the four-seamer is a big deal because he was at 94. And it's his success in his first season, his rookie year, was all about Kodai Senga throwing these fastballs and getting away with it. A, because it was 95-96, and B, because he had a cutter that he was throwing inside the zone with it very effectively. Ghost fork and all, yes, you have your putaway pitch. Those were the two pitches, getting those outs and getting those strikes beforehand. Everything else that he experimented with last year was just trying to help because he didn't really have that cutter working. He didn't have the velocity with the four-seamer. It was better in that first spring training start, and I'm a little more inclined to take a chance on Senga here. I call them Tobies with upside because they could be those six inning guys. And I know that upside comes in not just the high strikeout potential, but just in the volume potential of quality ratios. Senga has proven to be a little bit of both at times. And I would like to take a chance on that, especially if he's hosting the Mets are hosting the Pirates opening weekend.
Yeah.
And he's starting in that. Maybe. I don't know what the Mets are going to do with their rotation, but then they go to St. Louis after. And I don't feel like you're going to drop Senga after those. So I am in on Senga. I'm actually going to be raising him from that tier a little bit.
Yes. Come with me. I think he's somewhere in the 50s for me.
Okay. Well, let's not go crazy.
But yeah, he might miss that. We know Freddie Peralta, and then they may go Manaea. They may go Nolan McClain. They may go David Peterson. It, you know, who knows what the Mets are going to do after that, the Peralta start. So we'll see. I have always been a fan of Landon Rupp. I remain a fan of Landon Rupp. I think I'm more of a fan of Landon Rupp in a 15 team league. I just think that maybe the strikeout upside is not what I hoped when he was making these pitch mix changes last spring. I think I like the ballpark. I like the team. I enjoy his overall pitch mix. I don't know that his raw stuff is enough to get me super excited for like a big breakout. And I kind of feel the same way about Brian Bayo. I think it makes sense you have them in the tier together where it's like, listen, the version we saw of Bayo last year was really a solid MLB pitcher and really good for your ratios. And I think we're going to probably get that version of Bayo again. I just don't know that, like, you know, the slider is ever going to be a big swing and miss pitch. I know he went back to working on the changeup again this offseason, but like, we've kind of heard that for the last few years. And so until I really see that changeup go back to being a big swing and miss pitch, I think you're just kind of looking at like sinker, cutter, you know, soft contact type of arm. And there's value in that. Again, more of a 15 team league.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Landon Roop. And there was something I just saw that made me grimace and completely separate from these. I'm going to tell you what those are after this break. So Eric, I just grimaced because I looked up Shane McClanahan and I have this, again, I have this lovely app that I've been working on. I couldn't help myself. Shane McClanahan sitting 94 today. I'm a little perturbed by that. Considering the first one was 93, 80%. It just needed to get on the field, all the narrative you want. You expected a little bit better than 94 in the second one. Right, Eric?
Is that, that's what you grimaced about? It wasn't a Landon Roop related thing?
No, Landon Roop, I'm actually kind of interested in. And I was, I'm going to tell you all about that. And Brian Bayo, I'm not. But Landon Roop, Roop has a really good curve still. He needs to get a sinker inside more to righties. And the changeup was looking really good against lefties. I believe it was just yesterday. So I think that Roop has all the tools that he needs. And I think he's just needs more time in that rotation, honestly. And it looks like he's going to get that. He was paired with Blake Tidwell yesterday. Tidwell went second and was way worse than Roop. Yeah. Roop already has time in that rotation. So I don't see why the Giants wouldn't be going with him. There's also Carson Wisenhunt, but we know that the command still needs some work there, and that'll be a fun one to pick up midseason. But Roop is an Aaron Nola type, and I think there is room to grow here where we'll start to really see those strikeouts return again for him. So no, that wasn't the grimace. Bayo's just eh. There's just not enough to chase.
I thought you looked at the pitcherless stats image that gave Landon Roop an F stuff in his last appearance.
Yeah, don't worry about that, guys. Don't worry about that. It's okay. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. I think we covered most of these guys here. Shane Smith starting opening day for the White Sox against his old team, the Brewers. That's just nice. Maybe get a little second year improvement from Shane Smith. Again, another guy in a 15 team league I have no problem with. Some interesting names in this next tier. So let's jump into it. It's the late upside tier. Starts with number 92, Jack Leiter, 93, Christian Javier, 94, Zebby Matthews, 95, Mike Burrows, 96, Grant Holmes, 97, Grayson Rodriguez, 98, Spencer Arrighetti, 99, Jacob Lopez, 100, Will Warren, 101, Reed Detmers, 102, Reynaldo Lopez. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
You know, it's wearing a hoodie, thinking like it's still a little bit cold and like realizing, what am I doing? Why am I wearing this?
And then you get rid of the hoodie, like you get rid of these pictures or something.
Yeah, and then I unzip, you know, I open up a little bit and I go, I don't need this.
I don't need this. There might be one or two pitchers in here that I need, but I want to just clump together these guys coming off injury who are in the same tier, and that's Grant Holmes with an elbow injury, who is healthy, I guess, and pitching for the Braves right now. Reynaldo Lopez, also for the Braves, coming off an injury, healthy right now in the rotation. Grayson Rodriguez missed all last year with shoulder, lat, elbow injuries. And then Spencer Arrighetti, who is coming off a thumb injury and then a forearm or an elbow inflammation at the end of the year. But also, as of right now, I don't believe is in that six-man rotation we were talking about with the Astros. So I'm just curious your comfort level with these four guys coming off injury.
Yeah. So Grant Holmes went yesterday for Atlanta or 2 days ago and not impressive. Worst slider, not hard. He was saying he had his best stuff ever, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's just, no, you're not there yet. I mean, oh, first start of the spring, fine. But like you would think he'd be further along. Maybe he's not, but when we're talking about the end of our drafts, we're not going to assume things are going to get better. We're going to say like they're good right now. you know, if they're not good right now, then I'm not going to assume that they are. Maybe I'll change later. You have Zebby Matthews, who to me is just not showing enough. I got to say the four seamer is not exciting to me. It's at 96 and not great movement. It's not this overwhelming pitch. It's kind of empty velocity in a way. And a little bit of vert, but not enough. While the slider and the cutter can be very good, but I don't really think like he's doing the things you want, and I would avoid personally. You have Grayson Rodriguez in here, who is sitting like 96, and that's okay. Like, I would take a chance on Grayson Rodriguez. Maybe he's feeling all right. I don't understand this whole thing that's going on with him. Like, why do the Orioles get rid of him for Taylor Ward if he's sitting 96 now? What are we missing on the? I don't know. I just don't know. It's just going to be an elbow that's ready to explode or something. I don't know. Then you have Jacob Lopez, who went yesterday, who wasn't terrible, but he still needs to get a little bit more command and everything.
He's another one coming off of injury and also in a bad home park. Those two things make me a little concerned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't want really any of these on my 12 teamers. So, Mike Burrows, I'll take the chance on, and I should move him out.
That's the one we have to address, because there is a lot of helium right now. I think people were interested in Mike Burrows at the end of last year because he pitched pretty well for the Pirates, and it was starting to be like, okay, maybe Mike Burrows could take a leap. Then he gets traded to the Astros, and I think people's ears perk up when good organizations trade for players who we think have some upside. And then Burrows also, like, so far this spring has leaned into the sinker like a lot more often than he did with the Pirates. And that was kind of like that was a big thing for him. Again, we talked about how like the four seam is not a great pitch. So using the sinker more often to hide the four seam is probably a good thing for him. And then the Astros also seem to have tweaked his slider, which is like basically like 2.5 miles an hour harder. It's almost like a 90 mile an hour slider now. So it's a little bit more of like a gyro-y tight slider. Now, I don't know that you needed to mess around with that pitch, but I will say that like the strike rates on it in spring are really good. So maybe by tightening it up and making it harder, they're hoping to keep the whiffs, but also improve his ability to throw it for strikes. So he could be a lot more sinker and slider reliant to righties and not have to be so four seam reliant. I'm not pushing him up my draft board where like I need to get this guy. Like, I don't want him. I'm not trying to get him as one of my top five, maybe even six pitchers in a 12 team, but I have no problem with Mike Burrows being one of my preferred. I've got my starting pitchers. I need dart throws now, because I see how this works on a good team.
Yeah. So that slider got 4 of his 8 whiffs in that game on the spring training game, Mike Burrows
against the Nationals.
And that's great, because really it's just changeups only before. The four seamer and sinker to me are just not good. 94, 95, good velocity, fine. Sub 16 verts, it's okay. It's like, the sinker bad, like 13 on that, you know, 13, maybe 14 horizontal. That's just not a good sinker. And you'll be playing a lot of the game of keep away with those.
Yes.
So when it's just a changeup, it's not really exciting. However, 89, 90 of that slider, it is a big vert one. Like, it is 7 inches of vert, which is really like a cutter, honestly, more so than a slider at that point. Like, if you think of a typical gyro slider, that's a standard one that is 0-0, right? On that plus, so 7 inches, a lot moving up. And that's generally cutter territory, especially when it's like harder, right? Mm-hmm. I would say if Burrows were to throw a gyro, it'd be like 85, 86 or something, which is kind of what it was last year. And I'm okay with it. Like, I would go for this over everyone in this tier. I can't wait to put out my new top 100 on Thursday, because there are a lot of little adjustments I have to make here. Like, okay, hold on. Tyler Malley and Mike Burrows, they need to get out of this a bit. They need to move up. Kodai Senga needs to move up a bit, but a lot of the other ones, I'm just like, eh, we're moving those down. And with Burrows, yeah, take a shot on it. He should be, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head before cheating and looking my article. But right now with the Astros, Brown, Imai, Javier, Burrows, that's your four that is locked. Okay. Lance McCullers, probably not healthy. I don't know.
But if he's healthy enough to start the season, which he appears to be, he's probably in. He has no options. They're not going to send him down.
Well, they could put him honestly in long relief if they wanted to. He hasn't started a game yet.
They can't put him in long relief though, but right now long relief is slated to be Rodery Munoz, who's a Rule 5 pick.
Oh yeah.
So they can't.
They could just have him in the pen too.
Right. No disrespect to Rodery Munoz. The Astros may decide they would rather have McCullers in the bullpen. But yeah, I think McCullers is the question mark here. McCullers and Weiss to me are 5-6. And if McCullers isn't healthy enough and he starts the year on the IL. Well,
time out. Oh, yeah, 5-6. I apologize. Yes.
Yeah.
So then I think right now Ryan Weiss has the inside track on McCullers is my point.
Sure. Maybe. Yeah. And to your point, we have not seen McCullers.
We haven't seen him pitch yet.
He has one spring inning.
When was it?
I'm just looking at FanGraphs. He has one spring inning, three batters faced.
I'm trying to find it.
I'd have to look back for the exact date.
Okay, cool. So I'm not thrilled about that. And it does, though, seem like, right, Burrows is in there. He's the number four. And who are they going to get? They're going to go into Los Angeles Angels, and then it's into Fenway. I wish I knew it was either three or four for the Angels. Let's say he goes into Fenway. Are you going to start Burrows in Fenway for his first start?
No. I mean, in a 12-team league, I would ideally not.
If he goes and starts against the Angels, though.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. I think that's a really big deciding factor, because where Burrows is going right now is around pick 260, 270, right? So if you're not going to start him in that first month, we know that he's going against the Red Sox and Fenway. I just wouldn't. I don't feel like this is the guy, because those four seamers and sinkers are just not good. That's just the case. And hopefully this new slider is a much better slider and is very effective. I'm not going to judge on four whiffs in one game because it doesn't have that aggressive movement that you want to see. So I like the addition. It's just, we got to temper our expectations.
Totally, totally fair. I will just say very quick before we move to the next tier. I will be Charlie Brown in the football again with Reed Detmers. I'm not going to fully quit it. And because the price hasn't risen beyond, hey, I'm taking him with one of my final starting pitcher spots. And we'll see if the time in the bullpen where he really did optimize his pitch mix. And I spoke with him in Arizona and he mentioned that, you know, he's not obviously coming into the season saying like, this is my exact usage down to the percentage. But what he learned as a reliever will be brought into what he's doing as a starter in terms of how he went more slider focused, went away from the four seamer. He's bringing back in a changeup that he didn't have to use as a reliever. So I'm willing to take gambles on a guy who once was like a really well regarded prospect who was probably rushed to the big leagues a little too soon, using time in the bullpen to kind of like figure some things out. And so I'll take a gamble there.
Yeah,
there are a lot of gambles that we could take in this next spot as well. We will get to that tier after this break. So this tier is the possible job upside tier. Obviously, here being guys who are not confirmed are in the rotation, but guys who have upside if they make a rotation. That starts with number 103, Roky Sasaki, 104, Jacob Latz, 105, Justin Robleski, 106, Kyle Harrison, 117, Mick Abel, 108, Parker Messick, 109, Ben Kasperius, 110, Lucas Giolito. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This is going to a bar and outside. Oh, like sitting at the outside bar, it feels like, oh, I can do this again. Yeah. And like you go there and you go, man, can we do this more often? Because it's a possible job. Like, man, why can't we just live this life?
Yeah, I love it. We already mentioned Parker Messick before, so we'll just say that Nick and I are both fans of Parker Messick. If he was in the starting rotation, I'd imagine both of us would have him much higher. Our gut is that he probably won't start the year in the rotation, but is certainly somebody you need to keep in the back of your head that if he gets, he will, in my opinion, he will eventually get a shot over Logan Allen, and you should jump when he does. Ben Kasperius right now is not going to get a shot in the Dodgers rotation, so that's something that would change in the future. Lucas Giolito currently does not have a job.
It's the only time I think I've ever rooted for a Dodgers trade.
Oh, yeah?
I just want them to have a trade of some superstar that includes Ben Kasperius getting out of there, because the guy deserves to start somewhere.
Yeah, and you know what? He still might at some point this year, but it's not going to happen at the beginning. And Lucas Giolito is without a team, so... Yeah. We're still waiting on that. Let's go with the Dodgers here. 103, Roky Sasaki. 105, Justin Robleski. There is a world where both of them make the rotation if the Dodgers use a six-man rotation because, just to worry about like Yamamoto, Glasnow, and Otani being like with the innings. We know Emmett Sheehan is also in this rotation. So that makes four. Now, Roky Sasaki would be five. He has not had a good spring, and he has minor league options, and he's 24 years old. And I think we just have to like wrap our heads around the fact that I know he was a big name signing, and he still may very well wind up being good. And I don't believe that he is a reliever right now. Katie Wu, who covers the Dodgers for The Athletic, made it very clear that they see him as a starter and they want to give him the chance to be a starter. But he has three minor league options. And so that chance to be a starter does not have to happen at the major league level. And so he right now is not pitching his way into this rotation. And so I think there's a really strong possibility that he opens the season as a starter in AAA. And then the final spot is between Justin Robleski and River Ryan. And I think right now, Robleski is ahead of River Ryan in because of one, performance, and two, he'd be the only left-handed starter in the rotation because Blake Snell is going to start the year on the IL.
And three, he's done it more recently.
Yes. River Ryan missed all last year with an injury. And even though he told me again in spring, he said, I was healthy at the end of the last year and I wanted to pitch, but the minor league seasons were all done. So we had a long conversation about, do I pitch out of the bullpen in the playoffs? And they decided that wasn't the best course of action after missing the entire season. So this is another pitcher where like ostensibly he's healthy. He claims he's healthy. He claims he was healthy in September of last year, but it's hard to know that for sure until we actually see him on a mound for a long competitive game. I like River Ryan. I think he's going to get chances this year, and I would be interested when he does get chances. And I think if he and Roky Sasaki start the year in the AAA rotation, there's a very strong likelihood that River Ryan gets an opportunity before Roky Sasaki does. But I agree with you that I think Robleski is getting the first shot here.
So... yes, completely. I think Robleski is just the clear option. Sasaki is just not that good. It's an empty velocity four-seamer. It's very hittable. Yes, the splitter can be very good. It's volatile, more to Levin. And the slider is fine. It's fine. But it needs to be elite for him to mask the fact that his four-seamer gets hit. It's just how it is. If you want to say Nick, but that isn't that like Trey Savage? I totally understand that. I think the slider is better for you, Savage, and I think that the forkball is more consistent for you, Savage. But that's another story. He should go to the minors. And I don't understand why the Dodgers would not do a six-man rotation after just showcasing how it works and winning a World Series with it. Why not? Why not? And you have to preserve the health of these guys. You know this. You just made it work. and you have the arms. Maybe it's even Landon Knack in a bullpen day for the sixth one, right? I don't know. It makes no sense. But if Justin Robusky is not in that rotation, I am going to be so upset. I'm going to be texting everyone I know and just get me their number, you know, get me on the line. Like, it is ridiculous to me. And I do think that Robusky is a very good pitcher. He's not as impressive right now. Like yesterday he went, he was fine. He wasn't overwhelming as we've seen him before, but he has a very large mix. It is a good mix. It's 95 or so from the left side. You have a good slider. You've got a cutter in there. You got a curve. Like, you got all the things. And yes, he has like one of the worst extensions in the majors. It's okay. He's gone past this. It doesn't, I'm not going to look at that right now. It'd be nice if he didn't, but you know,
right.
And yeah, I think that you have a very good starter in Robleski. That should happen. If it is River Ryan, I don't love his fastball. And I think it's worse than what we saw before, which is a little disappointing, or maybe I just know more now. I don't know. And this, the breaking stuff is great. It is really good. I think it's a cutter and a slider. They're excellent. Maybe it's a slider and a curve. He has two. They're both dope. It's awesome. So that might be good enough for me too. If River Ryan is in that rotation, yeah, I'm going to take a chance on River Ryan. If it's Robusky, I'm going to go after that one. And you're asking, Nick, okay, you got to tell me who are they facing, right? Because that's the whole thing about these guys at the end of these drafts. Who are they going against? Well, this would be hosting the Guardians. Sign me up for that. In Los Angeles. That would be the second series. The first one is against the Arizona Diamondbacks hosting them. Either one, honestly, I'd be fine starting River Ryan or Justin Robleski.
Yeah, I'm moving Robleski up for mine. I just think I waited too long to, you know, acknowledge that he's going to take that spot. I'm a fan of that. I in this tier, like, we also have to mention how good McAble looks this spring.
Oh my gosh, the McAble guy.
And listen, like, I've heard enough. Aaron Gleeman, who covers the Twins for The Athletic, made it pretty clear that the Twins want Taj Bradley in the rotation because he's been in the big leagues for a long time. He has the track record. They traded for him. So I don't know that it matters how Taj Bradley looks this spring. I think he's going to be in the rotation, which means that it's probably shaping up to be, and I think Simeon Woods Richardson is also going to be in the rotation. He pitched well enough down the stretch last year that I think he gets the shot, which means I think it's between McAble and Zebby Matthews for the final spot. I had taken the stance that I think Zebby would get the first shot because he's been with the organization longer. He's had MLB experience with the Twins. They want to give him another crack. And I think that still could be how it plays out, but he is not looked nearly as good as McAble has looked this spring. And it's hard to make a case for putting Zebby Matthews in that rotation over McAble. But I think you have to keep McAble in this territory right now because we really don't know.
So I will say this. I mean, where we are again is the last round or two, right? And if McAble is in the rotation, let's ask ourselves this. Where do we rank him, Eric? Oh,
I mean, I would rank him up where I had Andrew Painter, at least.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And so for me, that was...
He's going into Kansas 63. City, by the way.
Like, I had him around... I have Painter at 63 around Tanner Bibee and Ryan Nelson. I'd probably put McAble...
Ryan Nelson definitely ahead.
Yes, but in that range.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would put McAble past the IL tier. So that's the cliff, right? And then past the Toby tier, that's after that. And then it's kind of like the fun guys. Like, okay, I'm going to be targeting a fair number of these. I would certainly put McAble there. And I will mention, let's say we don't know, which we don't right now. We should be putting McAble on right underneath that tier because it's not confirmed. And you'd be able to swap him for anyone you want if he's not. Like, this is very binary, which is great. And not all situations is binary great, but this is a case where you're happy that you know to move on from him if he's not in it and you don't lose value. Yeah. It's not a hipster Now, he could be one, to be fair. This isn't like all of a sudden he's a top 40 starter or something like that. There very well could be some growing pains. He throws hard. He has breaking balls that look great. He has a changeup that's great, but the command is still getting there a little bit. He can certainly get chaotic at times, and I think that over over a season, maybe a couple months or so, like that's going to be much better. And I do see that 7% under walk rate being an easy goal for McAbel by the end of the year, but it's not going to be necessarily a must add
right
when he gets it. So it does bring some hesitation in, but yeah, I'd probably put him after that. That second tier after the IL guys.
We should note Zebby Matthews pitched today, allowed 6 runs on 6 hits in 3 2/3 innings against the Braves. Velocity continues to be down across the board. About a mile and a half on his fastball, almost over 2 miles an hour on his sinker. Some of like the breaking stuff on the off-speed pitches, I'm not reacting to too much because it looks like there's some also just some changes, mm-hmm. right? Like he's down 6 miles an hour on his curveball. That's clearly a new curveball, or he's working on something with his curveball. But I mean, the four-seam fastball being down over a mile and a half and getting 0 whiffs on 15 swings is not great. The 6 runs in 3 2/3 is not great. It's just hard to make the case right now for Zebby over McAbel.
So I will mention the with my lovely app, I can see this. The first inning, he got overworked a lot. He had to get pulled in the first, and that's where he had 8 runs total. I mean, I guess the total for the for Atlanta, mm-hmm. but he had 6 runs in that inning to him before Romero came in after. Sorry. And he was sitting 93 in this first batter, and then got up to 95, 96, and then down to 94, 95 yeah. In that first. And then by the fourth inning, his final inning, he was sitting 95, Zebby Matthews. So just to give you perspective, he was sitting 96 plus last season. And not quite there now. And what we'd like to say is the young guys who are battling for a rotation spot, do not consider them as the ones who are ramping up. They are trying to get their rotation spot. So they are what we should expect from them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this isn't good. It just isn't good. He's getting a little more cut action on that four seamer. Fine. But the cutter and the slider are just not getting it done. I mean, it's a lot over the middle of the plate. I'm curious to see what our pitcherless card looks like on him. The changeup all over the place. He's someone who can throw strikes, but they're hittable strikes. They're like not. I've been saying this for ages. Zebby Matthews throws in the zone comfortably, not like as a pitcher. You know, not really executing the edges right. well. So, yeah. I might go to McAbel. Let's see what his next start is, and it might completely change the narrative.
Yeah. Last one I want to ask you about in this particular tier, and then I'll just see if, well, I guess last two. Let's just real quick. There's been a lot of Kyle Harrison chatter on the timeline, in particular with the changeup. What did you see? Because, you know, the pitcherless stats tweeted some stuff out. You commented on the pitcherless stats tweet. So what have you seen from the Kyle Harrison data? Do you actually think that he gets the fifth spot if Priester is on the sidelines to start the season?
Look at that reporting from Eric Samulski, being on top of it, knowing that I tweeted about the Kyle Harrison start. Oh, my gosh. I said Hendricks. Oh, what a career that was. With Harrison, his changeup did not have as extreme movement, same thing with Weathers, by the way, but it was still very good. It was better than it was last year for Harrison, not commanding it away to righties, you know? So it's not like it's exactly where we want it to be, but it was a good start. 95 miles per hour on the four seamer as well. It's a good looking slurve, I guess, 2-plane curve. It's a little bit harder than a typical one. I do have my questions about the consistency and locations from Harrison's always been my biggest question with him. But seeing that velocity up at 95 with this improved changeup it makes a lot of sense considering the old Kyle Harrison just really didn't have it. The only time I saw him with a proper changeup was his very last game in San Francisco against the Rockies in Coors. I remember this roundup so vividly. I was pumped, Eric. Here he was finally looking like a swatch. He was throwing these changeups to righties and Harrison was killing it in Coors. And I said, I can't wait for his next start in Oracle Park. And then he gets traded and we don't really see him again. And then here's this changeup now it is a better one.
Which he learned in the offseason from a Giants pitcher.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny.
I guess he went to Driveline, but it might be one of those throwing programs. But he went in the offseason and learned the changeup from one of his former teammates.
And what's hilarious is that I've seen only remarks about how good the Brewers are.
Right.
Right. You know, as a guys, that there's so much that goes into development and everything. So I'm interested. I would certainly go after this. I think he's in the rotation. There has been some conversation about Priester with Woodruff. It's really hard to envision the Brewers trading for this and denying their lefty starter. The only lefty that would be in that rotation.
Well, or Robert Gasser, but yes.
He's certainly ahead of Gasser.
I believe so based on how he's looked this spring. Yeah.
Yes. And so Mizrowski, Henderson, Harrison, Patrick, Gasser, and Sproat are the six options in the moment, regardless of or outside of Woodruff and Priester. Let's say both of those two guys are healthy. The Brewers have said that Chad Patrick is in it. And obviously so is Mizrowski. So then it would be between Harrison and Henderson. But I would think it'd still even be Harrison then, because they need that southpaw. And if Harrison's pitching like this,
yes.
So I would feel confident with that. First weekend is hosting the White Sox and then they are hosting the Rays. So down for that. So yeah, circle Harrison as a guy that I would love to have near the end of my draft as just, all right, let's go for one start and take it from there.
Yep. Last one, another lefty in this tier. Where are you at on Jacob Latz? It seems like Jacob Latz is going to be in the rotation for the Rangers. I wrote about him also in that late round pitchers article. And I really do like Jacob Latz, but you know, you and I chatted about this. I came away with the article saying, hey, I think he could really use a sinker. Would be really nice if he could use a sinker. If he had
Get any info on this of reaching out to the Rangers being like, why do you not throw sinkers with your lefties inside to other lefties? Cole Reagans didn't do it. He still doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. We hope to see it from Mackenzie Gore. It's very interesting to me. We also had Cody Bradford, I don't think, did it when he was a lefty one. It's just a weird trend that we've seen with these Rangers pitchers.
Yes.
And yeah, he absolutely could use that. He throws four-seamer slider against them right now. The four-seamer is a good vert pitch. 16 to 17. It is a little bit of a high arm angle, though, so it's not really that fantastic. It's also less extension than we've seen from Latz before. It was like 6'7", and now it's 6'4", in this spring. So that's a little concerning. Hopefully he gets that one back. But the change of command in his last game was really nice to right-handers, all down and away. I've seen him in the past go up and away arm side, and it looks like he's properly getting on top of it now, which is dope. He's got a little extra depth on it too. 3 over 15 whiffs on that one. I think it should get better over time. So I'm fine with it. Like, I'm not thrilled. I don't feel as if Latz is like this breakout star until he adds something else when it comes to velo, when it comes to maybe his slider being more consistent, hopefully against lefties, or that sinker coming in against lefties as well. There needs something else to really take him over the hump. But yeah, the Rangers are facing, let's see, what was it? They're facing the Phillies in Philadelphia, which I don't want, but then they'd be going to Camden. And I think Latz against the Orioles, I don't really love it, honestly. I think that's a much better offense this year than we've been giving them credit. I would be a little worried of that. But it's, yeah, I'm not as interested in Latz as others. I would say there's actually a different lefty that we didn't mention, who's the last one we're going to mention, which is Matthew Liberatore.
Yeah, and, okay. I'm glad you brought that up because he is not in this tier.
No.
But I did. Should. I'm also like, where is Matthew Liberatore?
Yeah, I was really down on Liberatore. Well, okay, so you're saying it like that, but understand the tiers of my top 200 are prospects show up and then all this stuff. And it's like, all right, 15 team Toby Liberatore. But Liberatore has actually looked pretty good this spring. He went really today, good. 7K, 16 whiffs on 65 pitches.
Yeah.
8 out of 19 on the slider. Are you kidding? I mean, I know that spring training, but yeah, I mean, okay, this isn't the best Baltimore lineup ever. This is actually like a really bad Baltimore lineup. As Kobe Mayu and Hurston Kerstad, but that's it. Everyone else, Eliody Tavares, but that's it. So, I mean, like, I don't want to read too much into that, but yeah, he's at 93-94. He has cut action on his four seamer. If as long as he gets that in with the right hands, we actually really wasn't here. The cutter wasn't really right there, but he was away with his changeup. Slider was feeling good against lefties, and it's a good situation. It's really nice being a six inning guy in St. Louis. He's better than like Miles Michaelis, and he's had some weird starts there too, you know. So look, I'll start him against the Rays opening weekend.
Yeah. I will end this by shouting out one guy as well. Well, you know, I think there are two back-to-back. I guess we'll end with these two pitchers who are back-to-back.
So
119 Cade Cavalli and 120 Johan Oviedo. Because to me, they're similar in the way that, like, if you look at raw stuff, you could say, hey, these guys are really intriguing. But command has been a major issue and may still be a major issue. But they both look relatively good this spring. The last two starts, Oviedo has not walked a batter. And the four-seam command has been a lot better for Oviedo the last two starts. And I know, like, I tweeted something else about it and people were like, well, he was facing a terrible lineup. And for me with Oviedo, I don't really care who he's facing in spring. It's, can I throw the fastball four strikes? Because command of the fastball for Oviedo is always going to be the biggest issue. I think he's pretty much locked into the Red Sox fifth spot in the rotation. And so if you are at the end of a draft and you're like, hey, I want to take a gamble and see if something works. If his command clicks, or the four seam command clicks, you know, it's an interesting team context and a lot of upside there. And then Cavalli was somebody who was a really well-regarded prospect, had surgery, inconsistent results. You have to imagine he's in the Nationals rotation for the entirety of the season. They have no reason to pull him from the rotation, but the team may be terrible.
Yeah. I really just, I'll put it this way. I don't like trusting pitchers who I think are going to ultimately be inefficient and do not have the leash of the veteran guys. I don't see either of these really being super efficient pitchers. Agreed. And for 12 teamers, that puts them into hipster tier. And I can't go for it. As much as I've been like, I remember when Oviedo was on the, I want to say the Cardinals?
Or he was the Cardinals Pirates? Before the Pirates, yeah.
Which was first? It was the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that I remember that like 3 or 4 years ago. And I had my friend Michael Scott actually asking me about him. Yes, that's his name. Yeah, he was named before the show, guys. He's a great dude. You probably met him at First Pitch Arizona. And I remember saying like, yeah, but he's got a lot to figure out still, but like he's got great breakers and the fastball actually looks really good. It's just the command. And I've been saying that for 4 years or whatever. And I've been waiting for this one to work out. I can't buy into it yet. Cade Cavalli, I still worry, is just a really good curveball. I know he throws hard, but the four seamer is not a whiff pitch. The better one is really the sinker that can be two plane. Kind of like Nolan McLean, but can he actually command it that consistently? I don't know. Mm. And even then, it's a sinker. It's equivalent of a sinker sweeper guy. And that still opens him up for problems against lefties. I just can't get behind that one either. And I don't have the faith in the Nationals coaching staff. I know that they've improved it. I know they've changed it at least. But I still can't tell you if that's good or bad yet. So I'm out on both of those. I would much rather have Matthew Liberatore.
Yeah. I when I say I'm intrigued by Oviedo, I currently have him 117th.
Oh my God. It's insane how close, like, our rankings were, Eric. I got to say.
Well, no. Yeah, I guess so. Well, I moved him up to that too. But like, I have him ahead of some of the Red Sox guys that you Like I have him ahead of Connolly early and Peyton Toll, even though I think they're better.
Well, now they will be.
He has a spot. But you know, I have him in a tier with guys like, honestly, I have him in a tier with guys like Parker Messick, Ian Seymour. It's like, those guys don't have rotation spots. I like them better than Oviedo, but Oviedo has a rotation
spot. I'm going to have Oviedo ahead of them because what's the point? Do not stash a starter.
Yeah.
Like, you might as well go for something and hope for the best as opposed to not having something and later hoping for the best.
So then I now have Oviedo 109.
Okay.
Which is with like Kyle Harrison, Ryan Weiss, like you say Kikuchi, like guys who are in the rotation where I'm like, whatever.
I would have some separation, but yeah. I think that like for Ryan Weiss, for example, I think he's going to be more efficient than Oviedo is going to be.
Possibly.
And same thing with Burrows.
Possibly. That is going to do it for this episode. That's going to do it for our jaunt through Knicks rankings. So we are going to start looking ahead next episode. Next episode, we'll probably go over some of our TGFBI stuff. Nick, well, I have your rankings update coming out.
Well, that's right. I have my rankings coming out on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be another Thursday after that. And then it's going to be Monday because, of course, you have draft weekends. And then I want to have like the normal cadence of Monday before the season starts. Maybe I'll make it Wednesday just to be like, here's my last official ranking before the season starts. Mm-hmm. Regardless, we'll probably talk about those changes, and whatever changes those are the things that Eric and I will want to discuss because it is spring training and those are the guys that are going to be of interest anyway.
And we will also, Nick and I will both be at Tout this weekend.
Oh yeah. If you're in New York City, guys, hang out with us.
Yeah.
I will be drafting at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning at the Bellevue Hotel.
And I draft at 2 p.m. on Saturday.
I'm going to be coaching basketball. Otherwise,
we'll probably like address those drafts, not like in a deep dive, but you know, being in drafts and doing two drafts together over the last couple of weeks crystallizes some of the thought process on who you're going after, why, and some things like that. So we will talk through those.
What I'll probably do is give a full on video review, via my phone onto Twitter right after the draft. So that is where you'll get my thoughts probably on Tat Wars. And Eric, you, maybe if I'll see you on Saturday night, I'll probably get it from you.
Yeah. I'll give you the lowdown and maybe it'll be an article on NBC Sports. I'll let everybody know. Until then, I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I got to go outside and touch some grass.